And welcome back. This is Daily Buddhism Audio Show number 29. I'm Brian Schell, your host for the show. As always, you can find the text for everything in this program and all past episodes on our website at www.dailybuddhism.com. This week, we had a koan, a couple of reader questions, a book review, an interesting lesson from that book, and a special edition meditation podcast. But as usual, we'll do some announcements first. The only major announcement this week is for the new Weekly Buddhism PDF magazine. The Weekly Buddhism PDF magazine issue number 4 will be available later this weekend, and as before, will still be free. However, starting next week with issue number 5, it will become subscription only. I posted the rates last week, but this week I set up the site to accept your payments, so everything is good to go for your subscriptions. The rates are as follows. Each individual issue will only be $1.25. My thinking behind this is that people who don't subscribe may still want one from time to time to pick up a certain article. I'll still be posting the table of contents to the site every week as I have in the past few weeks, so you can see what's inside each one and decide individually if you want. The next step up is what I call the trial offer, although you can do this repeatedly every month if you want. It's a sort of mini-subscription of 4 issues. This runs $5. You won't save any money by going this route, but it's intended more of a convenience over remembering to buy individual issues. The best option is, of course, the full subscription. This is $50 for an entire year. That's $1 per issue. Probably less, because there'll almost certainly be some special issues come out. If you've looked at the free copies I've sent out in the podcast feed or put on the website, you've seen them and you can't argue that there's way more value there than $1. But remember, though, that the Daily Buddhism, daily emails, and the audio podcast will remain free just as they always have been. The Weekly Buddhism, however, will have all the same material as the mails and the audio show, but include a lot of expanded content such as current events, news, full texts of classic Buddhist books, and much more. I have big plans for that. And one final note on that, I have mentioned from time to time that you can donate on the Daily Buddhism website. I've gotten a lot of support there, and I appreciate it. So, for those of you who have donated $50 or more in the past, you will automatically get a year subscription. Just to keep things fair, though, that offer is open to anyone. Whether you want to buy a subscription or choose to donate $50, you'll get a year subscription either way. So you can look at the payment in whichever way works better for you. Either click on the donate button on the homepage or go to the weeklybuddhism.com subscription page and sign up that way. Doesn't really matter. And I do have one final announcement. I've been reading the Dhammapada, my favorite of the classic Buddhist texts, a chapter a week in the Daily Buddhism for a long time now, but I'm going to discontinue doing that. With 26 chapters, it would take 4 or 5 more months to finish the thing. But now, with the Weekly Buddhism PDF magazine, I can put the entire book in there in one issue, and that's exactly what I'm going to do. Issue number 4, the last free issue, will include the entire Dhammapada text. So you can read the entire thing at your leisure, print it out, read it on screen, whatever's convenient for you. Now, if you're disappointed that I won't be reading it on the podcast or want it to come out in the daily mails, send me a message. I can always bring it back. But I think doing it this way is a lot more efficient. And that's all the announcements for this week. So let's speed on with the show for the week. First up this week, we had a reader write in and ask, what is the Buddhist way to overcome fear and anxiety in life? I understand it's by controlling the mind, but the question is, what are some of the key techniques used to tame the mind in a more positive way? And my short answer to that one is that meditation will generally lead to a calmer, more thoughtful approach to most things. And that would be my main recommendation. Get started meditating and learn to control your anxieties. But another thing to consider is that fear is generally a result of attachment. And of course, Buddhists consider attachment, or grasping, a bad thing. Everything changes, and that's something we have to learn and accept. Now that's a whole lot easier to say than to do, but that really is it in a nutshell. Think for a bit on what causes your fear. What are you afraid of losing? Is that something or someone that you're going to lose eventually anyway? Most things and people are going to be lost someday, no matter what we do. And it's important to understand and accept that. And that does sound somewhat negative, but once those bonds of grasping can be broken, you will have true freedom and the fearlessness that accompanies it.
Hi, Brian. This is Chris calling from Texas again. I called earlier about the music playing in the background. I really appreciate you taking care of that. I still really enjoy your podcast, and I don't think that you've addressed this topic in past episodes, but I always wanted to know, what is the deal with the big Buddha statue? I've noticed that most of all the images that you see of the Buddha are of a big guy with a big belly and usually has a big smile on his face and usually has various things around him, fancy robes or food or whatever, that sort of thing. And he looks rather greedy. And I was wanting to find out if you could dwell into that, spend some time in explaining why is that the image that's usually portrayed in society when they talk about the Buddha. Thank you so much, and keep up the good work.
Oh yes, the fat Buddha. Whenever you mention Buddha to a non-Buddhist American, or maybe all Westerners, I'm not going to presume, the big fat Buddha comes to mind. I have pictures of the fat Buddha on the website. Go to the show notes and you can find it from there. But he's fat, he's jolly, the laughing Buddha is well-fed and looking happy. Rub his belly for luck! The thing is, that's not really Buddha. His name is Hote. He's a deity of contentment and abundance. The statue is originally based, anyway, on a real Chinese Zen monk named Budai, who lived in the early 6th century. He's almost always shown smiling or laughing, hence his nickname in Chinese, the Laughing Buddha. And he's also sometimes associated with Maitreya, who is another Buddha who will appear in the future. But remember back to the original story of Siddhartha Gautama, the original Buddha. The prince left the city to go live in the wilderness for 6 years. While he was out there, he lived the life of a renunciate ascetic, refusing food and nearly starving to death. He probably looked something like the statue that I have pictured on the site of the emaciated Buddha. Now afterwards, he turned to the middle path, avoiding all extremes such as eating too much or too little. After recovering from his time as a starving ascetic, the real Buddha almost certainly looked like a normal-sized man, not big and fat like Hote. I have another picture on the site of a normal, realistic-looking portrayal of the Buddha. But if you're running a restaurant or a public business, which one of the three looks happier? Fat Buddha, starving Buddha, or normal Buddha? Which one would you want advocating your product? Yep, in a capitalistic Western world, fat and sassy wins out over quiet and contemplative every time. Eventually, people just started calling the fat man Buddha, possibly due to the similarity to the name Budai. And a few months back, we even had a story here in the Koan section about Budai, called The Laughing Chinaman. You can look that up in the search function. And then we had a book review this week. This one is called Footprints in the Snow by Chan Master Shen Yang. Have you ever dreamed about becoming a Buddhist monk? I have. I've visited some of those temples and can definitely easily imagine living there, doing the daily work, chanting, meditating, and so forth. But after reading this book, I see that my mental picture of it all may have been a little bit rosy. Footprints in the Snow is the autobiography of Sheng Yan, a Chan, or Chinese Zen, master. There are several biographies of this man in Chinese, but this is the first edition in English. Sheng Yan was born in an extremely poor farming family in the Chinese countryside. With no other options available to him, he was taken by a family friend to the Wolf Mountain Monastery, where he learned the basics of becoming a monk. He later moved on to Shanghai, but the war between the communists and the nationalists drove him to become a soldier for life in Taiwan. Eventually securing his freedom from the soldier's life, he once again became a monk. After travels to Canada, the USA, and back to China, he finally became a Chan master and one of the most influential Buddhists alive today. He combines his personal story with historical events, and we can see how political changes in China and Taiwan altered not only his life, but Buddhism in general. I found this one hard to put down. I'm not usually a fan of biographies, but his easygoing writing style and obvious love of what he does makes every page enjoyable. Along with the story, the author explains a bit of Buddhist philosophy in a comfortable, jargon-free style that daily Buddhism readers will appreciate. My favorite parts of the book, however, are his interactions with the monks and abbots in the various monasteries. Far from being the altruistic teachers and devoted worshippers we usually envision, he shows us the real picture. Many of the Chinese monks sell their services for money. They get into trouble with alcohol and women. There's lots of office politics in the hierarchies, and so forth. The pettiness of some of the monks and abbots are shocking. One thing is clear, though, in the monks' world, everything revolves around money. Given that we stereotypically assume monks to be poor and penniless, above such financial concerns, the reality of monastery life is quite different. And he goes from poor farm boy to a monk, to a soldier, to an abbot, to a monk again, eventually becoming homeless, and then rising back to the top. All the way, he refines his teaching style and is attached to nothing. It's a dramatic story, and there are some good educational bits on Buddhism scattered throughout. But especially if you ever wanted to know more about monastery life, this is a must-read, and it's going to go back into my Read It Again Someday pile. You may have noticed by now that I tend to avoid writing on some of the more religious topics of Buddhism. Instead, I usually focus more on the easily experienced and obviously practical truths in Buddhist practice. But not this time, since I recently came across something that I really wanted to share that actually changed my mind about something. In the previous review, I reviewed Footprints in the Snow by Chan Master Sheng Yan. As a biography, it was very interesting, but it also had some of his own philosophy and teaching experiences in it. Toward the end of the book, he tells us how he explains prayer to Westerners. And below follows what may be the clearest, most logical argument for prayer that I've ever seen. As with all things Buddhist, you can believe it or not, according to him. Be sure to notice that he's perfectly willing to accept that any given miracle may just as well be coincidence. From Footprints in the Snow. Recitation, or prayer, is another element of Chan practice that I teach. The power of prayer cannot be explained by psychology or science. When we pray, we generate power. In Buddhism, we say the relationship between the person who prays and the object of prayer is like the relationship between a bell and the person who rings the bell, or a mirror and the person who stands before the mirror. The bell won't ring without someone to ring it. The mirror does not make a reflection without someone standing in front of it. The being, the object of prayer, can only have power if people have faith in it. It's the same as in Christianity. You're saved only if you have faith. On this level, Buddhism is no different from that in Western religion. Faith is what gives people its power. On another level, Chan practice generates mental power. For example, when a mother thinks about her child all the time, the child may begin to think that he should write or call her. He seems to sense her need, even though he didn't hear from her directly. This kind of mental power is universal. It happens in the East and the West. And that's just the power of one person. Consider what can happen when 1,000 people recite the Great Compassion Dharani together. The power generated may create a substantial reaction, ripening causes and conditions until change occurs. People may come together to pray for money to buy a piece of land for a monastery, for example, which actually happened in Taiwan when we were trying to find funds to purchase the land for Dharma Drum Mountain, our monastery and Buddhist university there. It is not as if the Bodhisattva Guanyin gave those people the will to buy that land. It's the power of the mind that praying to the Guanyin generates that leads to the result, although the causes and conditions need to be ripe for the results to occur, no matter how many people come together to pray. Chan does not encourage individuals to use recitation to ask for specific results. When Chan masters ask for something, it's not just for themselves, it's for everyone. For example, if there is a terrible drought, with the land all cracked and dried up, local officials may ask a monk to ask for rain. There are many examples when a Chan master asked for rain, and rain came. Westerners think this is outright superstition. I agree that it is indeed possible that such occurrences are pure coincidence. That when you pray for rain and rain comes, well, it was simply time for it to rain, with or without the prayer. Still, the nature of what I do and teach cannot be explained by psychology or science. Enlightenment in Chan cannot be manufactured in a laboratory or measured by a machine. Enlightenment can only be known by direct experience, just as the warmth of a cup of tea can only be understood by the person drinking it. And we've not had a koan for a few weeks, so this time we have one called Shōun and his mother. Shōun became a teacher of Soto Zen. When he was still a student, his father passed away, leaving him to care for his old mother. Whenever Shōun went to a meditation hall, he always took his mother with him. Since she accompanied him, when he visited monasteries, he could not live with the monks. So he would build a little house and care for her there. He would copy sutras, Buddhist verses, and in this manner receive a few coins for food. When Shōun bought fish for his mother, the people would scoff at him, for a monk is not supposed to eat fish. But Shōun did not mind. His mother, however, was hurt to see others laugh at her son. Finally, she told Shōun, "I think I will become a nun. I can be vegetarian, too." She did, and they studied together. Shōun was fond of music and was a master of the harp, which his mother also played. On full moon nights, they used to play together. One night, a young lady passed by their house and heard music. Deeply touched, she invited Shōun to visit her the next evening and play. He accepted the invitation. A few days later, he met the young lady on the street and thanked her for her hospitality. Others laughed at him. He had visited the house of a woman of the streets. One day, Shōun left for a distant temple to deliver a lecture. A few months afterwards, he returned home to find his mother dead. Friends had not known where to reach him, so the funeral was in progress. Shōun walked up and hit the coffin with his staff. "Mother, your son has returned," he said. "I am glad to see you have returned, son," he answered for his mother. "Yes, I am glad too," Shōun responded. Then he announced to the people around him, "The funeral ceremony is over. You may bury the body." When Shōun was old, he knew his end was approaching. He asked his disciples to gather around him in the morning, telling them he was going to pass on at noon. Burning incense before the picture of his mother and his old teacher, he wrote a poem. For 56 years, I lived the best I could, making my way in this world. Now the rain has ended, the clouds are clearing. The blue sky has a full moon. His disciples gathered around him, reciting sutra, and Shōun passed on during the invocation. That's all I have for you this week. Send in your questions by email at dailybuddhism@gmail.com or phone them in at 937-660-4949 or post them in the comments section of any individual blog post. If you aren't already subscribed to the podcast, you can do so easily by clicking on the iTunes button or RSS podcast buttons on the dailybuddhism.com homepage. If you are subscribed to the podcast already and like it, then stop by the iTunes store and post a review for the show. Also, check out the new weekly Buddhism PDF magazine if you like. There's plenty in the works coming up for that. And of course, sign up for the always free daily email list or RSS feed, where you get some news, lesson, or Buddhist wisdom in your mailbox every weekday. The Daily Buddhism does run primarily from your donations, and there are a couple of donation buttons on the site as well. One for a one-time donation, the other for a monthly contribution. And be sure to check out podcast number 28, which went out a few days ago, the special guided meditation show. I had a lot of fun doing that one, and I'd like to do some more, but only if I get requests. As I said with the series on meditation a few weeks back, I'd put off the subject for a very long time since there was just so much to cover. But now that I've gotten past that, I'd like to cover meditation more heavily in the future. But again, only if that's what you want to hear. Until next week, stop by the website and look around. Pick up issue number 4 of the Weekly Buddhism, and try to set aside some time for meditation and just sit.